the real origin for the kind of history side of my life really comes from my family. And I grew up in Providence, Rhode Island, with an Italian grandfather and two Italian grandfathers, actually, and two Swedish grandmothers. I grew up listening to stories of the past, stories of my family's past. You know, my sort of raconteur grandparents on both sides of the family, you know, had a different tale of one's childhood or one's kind of like, you know, young adulthood living in Providence. And they were filled with such interesting kind of characters. And to me, you know, as a kid growing up in the 70s and 80s, like such an old world feel, even though the world wasn't particularly old that they were describing. And as I got a little bit older, I realized that whether it was the Civil War or whether it was Vietnam or, you know, whether it was the Gilded Age, the only stuff that I really knew about those things, those historical things, were also kind of embedded in those anecdotes, those little moments, those little stories of charges up various hills, of assassination attempts, of an incredible romance amidst war or famine or whatever it might be. In those anecdotes was so much power to kind of like speak to me, you know, as a person, you know, living in the 20th and now 21st century, that it was the anecdotes themselves that really like spoke to the larger story of history. And so when I was thinking about like what kind of stories I wanted to tell as a public radio reporter and what sort of things I wanted to do as an artist, I was really drawn to that idea that those little anecdotes had like such kind of power in them. And what would happen if I tried to tell them myself?
It's as much about how you say something as it is what you say, isn't it?
Absolutely. See, for instance, that pause, it is much about how you say something, dramatic pause, than what you say. It really does make all the difference. You know, there are these tools that, you know, we as, you know, people who are communicating through read, written language, there's so many extra tools in your toolbox. Like, you get to speak the exclamation point instead of simply have the exclamation point. You get to control how much emphasis gets put on that fact, gets put on that twist in the story.
How do you select your topics?
I have always been, and am now professionally so, a person who is always looking for those things that reach out from, whether it's a moment in a documentary you're watching, or, you know, a speech made in a movie, or like an incredible fact that's found and embedded in a paragraph in a novel. I'm looking for things to kind of like reach out and cut through the banality and the haze of one's like every day when they're running errands or they're frustrated with their kid or they're worried about, you know, their next career move. Because these things happen. Like, you're reading, you're like, wait, holy cow, I can't believe that once there was a program in the United States government during World War II to arm Mexican free-tailed bats with tiny bombs so that they can be dropped over Japanese cities and cause havoc and create fires. Like, when you come across something like that and you have that moment of like, wow, this is amazing, or, oh my God, right now I have really, I find myself like moved by the plight of someone that I can truly never know because they died many, many decades ago. I'm looking for those moments when those facts and things kind of comes out and grabs me. And when it has, I make note of it, and that's when the research starts, and that's when the story crafting starts. But it starts with that thing. It starts with being moved or being surprised or being deeply amused. And then the process of writing and researching is finding a new way to kind of tell that story, both for novelty's sake, but also because, so that I can, you know, the goal with every one of them on some level is for me to transmute that thing where I was once moved, and how can I then reach out and find the right voice, find the right words, find the right music, find the right format that can move the listener in that same way and kind of like share the connection of like, hey, isn't this thing special?
The music beds that you use, are they from a production library, or do you have your own collection of vintage recordings or movie soundtracks?
Yeah, I mostly have my own collection of vintage recordings and movie soundtracks and whatnot. The music, like sometimes the writing goes fairly quickly, and then finding the right music can take forever. And, you know, because there's a few different things I'm trying to do. And one is, maybe this is the cinema studies major in me, you know, I think that I'm trying to tell a visual story, you know, through words and music alone. And so movie soundtracks and movie scores, you know, often, you know, they move in different ways than other types of music, and they have, you know, peaks and valleys and twists and tempo shifts and those sorts of things, you know, often employed through often some aggressive editing to really, you know, both set the set the scene, but also move the scene along and allow me to kind of like match words with music that is hopefully, you know, matching words with music and then pictures in the heads of the listener. There really is something about those music beds. You know, you hear it often on public radio that when the right piece of music is behind the right words, you know, there's a little bit of magic there that so often for me in my process is like, those are the moments where I find like real sort of joy in what I'm doing, when like, ooh, this thing is really working. And look how, you know, these words that I've been toiling over are suddenly like elevated and suddenly become an extra, you know, their own thing. Often the magic of like contemporary public radio style storytelling and podcasts like mine comes from the kind of like kismet that can occur when those two things are working in tandem.
When you sit down to create your pieces for the Memory Palace, do you write them backwards? And what I mean by that is that you know what the kicker is going to be, the punchline, if you will, the surprise ending in some of your pieces. So the task then becomes to craft a story that will get you to that great ending?
You know, occasionally. I think each one is its own little puzzle. But more than it being, do I know the ending? I mean, the truth is I do often want to know the ending, because if I don't, then I'll be flailing, you know, forever. I'll be at sea, like looking for the shore. No, I think the thing that gets me to that kicker, gets me to that twist, or gets me to kind of stick the landing where, you know, at the end of this, you kind of understand what it has all meant. You understand its moral, or you understand the gravity of the situation, which I think often does happen at the end of the pieces. That really comes from the beginning of the process, which is the difference between an anecdote and a story is profound. And it is found in moral, and it is found in meaning, you know, like, there's a million factoids out there, but when you tell a story about those same facts, and it has a beginning and a middle and end, and it has characters that compel you, and it has situations that relate to your own, like, that's when you find meaning in it, and that's when the anecdote becomes elevated. And so for me, you know, when I find one of these facts or find one of these historical situations or people whose story I want to find a way to tell and kind of like create like a mini biography, which, you know, needs to have a story arc, the real process after the research has been done comes into, like, what's the meaning of this story? And because, for instance, you know, I may have lots of facts at my fingertips about the singer Jane Froman, who was a torch singer in the 1930s and a popular radio star, who then, you know, suffered a sort of a terrible plane crash on her way to her first USO show in Europe during World War II. And that itself is kind of a ripping yarn. But for me, the meaning, and I think the thing that I'm trying to do and the thing that I think elevates the story, is that she is a person who then suffered, you know, many injuries and then, you know, dealt with them for the rest of her life. And the narrative about her, literally the narrative that was told in the movie biopic about her, is about how she triumphs over adversity. But for me, I'm fascinated by that adversity itself. You know, what is it to live with this changed body? And as I start to dwell on that, I start to realize that so many people around us, so many people we love, so many neighbors and friends and even partners and parents, you know, suffer their own, you know, medical burdens and their own physical burdens. And it is difficult in the same way that looking at this beloved torch singer, watching this, you know, woman in a biopic, it is hard for us to, you know, remember that there's something, that there are things going on behind that smile. You know, once I kind of connect that to my own situation, like, that's when I know what the story is. Like, that's when I know that the ending will come. Like, that's when I know I don't need to reverse engineer it.
You've been working on the Memory Palace features for several years, I believe.
Yeah.
Kept a count. How many have you done so far?
I've done 65 with a couple of, you know, little sort of episodes. You know, I did like a short film and stuff like that, but it's been 65 spread out, fairly sprinkled, we'll say, over the course of several years.
As long as you've been working on the Memory Palace features, I believe you've indicated it's been an irregular production schedule, but that's about to change, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm about to start doing this as essentially a full-time job and start releasing the shows much more frequently, beginning with a summer season that'll start on June 21st and then have episodes each week for through the summer until Labor Day.
And what's the easiest way for interested listeners to access your features, your podcasts?
Well, you can look for the Memory Palace on iTunes, or you can go to thememorypalace.org.
Nate DeMayo is the creator of the Memory Palace, which you can hear now on WABE. Nate, it's been a pleasure. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Steve.